It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
And they go to Sacktown today.
I cannot believe
it's tonight.
You just called it Sacktown.
Is that what they call it? Is that the Sacramento? What's wrong with that? They wake up this morning in the municipality known as the City of Sacramento, the California State Capitol.
Can we just call it a hellhole?
No, that's even worse. Don't correct me for that then call it what you did.
I'm sorry.
Bouncing ball to the hole at short. Gage Workman makes the throw to first. Low dug out nicely by Bush. And this ball game is over, and the Cubs win an easy one against the Athletics. 18-3, the final.
It was a fun atmosphere, I thought. You embrace it. You enjoy it. It's a new baseball experience. It's the first big league game here. We just tried to enjoy it, and I think the guys you just embrace it.
Sacramento had the runs.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. What, did they get torpedo bats overnight? What happened there, Mr. David?
Good morning, Mully. Happy Tuesday. It seems as if the Cubs, yes, got the shipment of torpedo bats, and then they...
They
assaulted the A's in Sacramento.
Oh,
that was really bad for the Sacramento A's.
You know, it didn't look too nice either. I'm talking about the ball yard. It looked very small. It looked like they were playing the Railcats, not the team that shares that stadium.
15,000 seats. More. I would.
Apparently, you can't. You have to leave the clubhouse to change your mind.
Well, If you look at it that way, yeah, it's very inconvenient for the players because what they're used to are the luxuries of being a major league player. If you're the A's, you might be looking at an uptick in attendance. They only averaged 12,000 fans per game last year. They were last in the majors. And in Sacramento, you can get 15,000 people into that bandbox. And they were there last night for opening night. A very clunky opening night from the A's perspective. The Cubs took advantage on the field.
Scored a lot of runs.
There was no internet for times.
We got knocked off for two innings.
We got knocked off the air.
It goes from fourth inning to sixth inning.
Yes. But there was no power shortage for the Cubs.
No.
18 runs.
They provided all the power needed.
It was a Carson Kelly game.
That is bizarre.
Talented guy. I love the way he does. I loved him on The Voice. I think he's great on the Today Show.
No, that's Carson Daly.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That's an obvious mistake you can make.
Who is Carson Kelly?
He's the guy who went hit for the cycle.
Said every Cub fan last night. Who is this Carson Kelly?
He's the catcher. He can hit a triple.
He's the backup catcher.
The backup catcher? Fair enough.
He's a backup catcher.
And he played and he hit for the cycle, which is a really hard thing to do.
The Cubs, I haven't looked at the analytics to this, but just anecdotally it seems that they must have the most production out of the catching position of any team in the majors so far, the first week of the season.
Well, I mean, if you include all of baseball, I believe Kyle Teal leads the league in everything.
Kyle Teal, that's a good answer. Yeah, a lot of catchers using their bats in big ways right now. So Carson Kelly hits for the cycle. The Cubs score 18 runs. And Craig Counsell, no longer cranky.
No. Craig seemed, I love that he didn't know that Carson Kelly had hit for the cycle. And I love that Carson Kelly didn't know.
Do you really believe that?
I know he said it. I mean, if I hit for the cycle, I'd know it.
I think that I believe Counsell didn't. Like Counsell's got 100 things, and he doesn't get caught up in all that stuff. He is the guy at the party that's looking at his watch and knows exactly where he parked and he's going to be on time. But
let's hear him react.
Okay, here's Craig Counsell.
I didn't realize he had a chance at a cycle, but when that ball kicked off the wall, the dugout started going crazy. So I figured something was going on. Yeah, they're fun days, man. They're rare days, and they're once in a lifetime type days for players.
Once in a lifetime.
What a difference a day makes.
Yeah, that's pretty happy.
What a difference a day makes for Craig Counsell. Not sounding cranky, not sounding fed up. That's what seeing your team score 18 runs will do for you.
I think it's not having to rely on your bullpen.
They did not need to do that.
No.
Thankfully.
Runs, as you say.
Oh, Julian Merriweather pitched.
Ah, well, if you warm up, you might as well get to it at some point.
Get him in the game, yeah. But the A's were not really the kind of way you want to celebrate your first game in a new ballpark.
A new city. Sacktown.
Yeah. Cubs have an opportunity to win two out of three there, or maybe even sweep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're off to a good start. Do those runs, can you prorate them over the course of the series?
No, that's not the way it works.
I wish that worked that way.
Kyle Tucker, four more hits. Four hits. Three runs batted in. Remember when we were worried about him getting off to a good start? He's off to a good start.
Yeah.
King Tuck. And then Bushy, Michael Bush.
My. You love those nicknames.
Hockey nickname. Three hits and a homer. They had 21 hits, Molly. 21 hits.
Bush fire. He was on fire.
He was. And it spread.
21 hits.
Ben Brown, he gets the victory. He went five. But he ran into a little trouble in the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the Cubs needed. Exactly what the Cubs needed.
The A's?
Yes.
Sacramento?
The A's,
what's
Sacramento.
The worst part of that trip, David?
Well.
The minor league ballpark?
Don't you think a little bit? I know the ballpark has its limitations.
It's quaint and you think it's.
Well, I think players sometimes sound a little spoiled if they're complaining about not having enough room to dress.
I think players are a little spoiled.
Okay. The amenities aren't there, certainly.
You know, when you have a clubhouse where when the guy puts the key in the door, he breaks the window. It's kind of a problem.
When the Cubs return to Wrigley, they are going into the equivalent of, say, the Four Seasons or
sure.
name your luxury hotel. That's their clubhouse is yes. among the nicest in baseball. I can't imagine it being much nicer than what the Cubs go to on a daily basis.
So let me ask you, if you're kind of rating thus far their opening days,
mm-hmm.
how do you top that one?
It's hard.
What do you do on Friday?
Demanding 19 runs on Friday.
All right, there he is.
Demanding 19.
He's called for it.
Yeah.
Got to get it done.
This definitely was greater than sign in Japan. This definitely was better than anything that happened in Phoenix.
Okay.
And Sacramento will be memorable for the 18 runs they scored. The rest of it's just noise. The rest is just noise and inconvenience. It was very on the telecast, not the radio broadcast, because I listened to both, and I was very confused by the radio broadcast. Get to that in a moment, but the television,
just because it was not on for a while.
Yeah, when you're watching on marquee, you could hear everything.
Yes.
And it's funny. So, Molly, I do this, and this is kind of a glimpse into the way I watch baseball sure. games at home. I will sometimes most times try to sync up the radio because, yes. well, I just do. And
A lot of people do.
And I have the closed caption on my television because I like to see what the announcers are saying,
mm-hmm.
But I have it on mute. So I'm watching and I'm listening, and the closed caption is coming across on
yeah.
the television.
That's good.
And I had to turn it up because it was showing like lyrics to the song. So they started playing the outfield song.
Oh, that's funny.
Those are lyrics. What's going on here? And it was so loud on the broadcast that it came through in the closed captioning. I don't think that typically happens.
I find that really amusing. I also like the idea that you really can read the game.
I do read the game. It's a different game. I do read the game. But that doesn't bother me because I think that I prefer it that way sometimes. I prefer it's much quieter.
Yeah.
It's much better. And I do prefer the radio feed as well. Not just because sure. I work here, but because I favor Pat, Ron, and Zach on a regular basis.
Sure.
But so I'm listening and I'm going to bed and I'm trying to listen to the game as I get ready for bed. And it was late and whatever. And then all of a sudden it goes straight to Xfinity Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and it says I'm blacked out in this market. And I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, how did I get blacked out?
But what I would come to find when I got here this morning was that
it's a minor league ballpark and they got knocked off.
They lost internet.
Yeah, there were too many people looking up a score.
So for a couple innings.
Six guys looked up the same score and the internet blew up.
Or too many people calling an Uber because they wanted to get out of there early. Whatever the case is, they lost internet. They were knocked offline. So you're sitting there waiting for it to come back, and I just didn't wait for it to come back. And I woke up, and they had scored 18 runs. Not a bad deal.
Yeah, that's a good deal. That's good stuff.
The Cubs were so potent offensively, they knocked the game off the internet. They knocked the game off the radio.
It's very interesting. So Justin Steele against Luis Severino tonight, another late start. That's just life. And then Wednesday is a getaway day, and 2:35, first pitch right here on the score, 2:00 pregame.
Another opportunity for a victory. Another opportunity for the Cubs.
Are we going to the Sox game on Wednesday? Did we not discuss that? Didn't we say
we can work out details later?
Weren't we threatening to do that?
Well, they might be in the midst of making more history if we do.
Yeah, they might. It's Sean Burke again.
Are the Twinkies still in town?
Twinkies still here. That was the first.
How would you like to be them right now?
No.
They're 0-4, correct? 0-4.
I wouldn't want to work for the Polacks. Don't be mean.
They have lost four games and a potential owner in the last several weeks. That's a bad month.
Yeah, they're having a rough go.
That's a bad month in Minnesota.
The other thing is, like, the Twins fans don't like anybody.
What do you mean?
I mean, they don't like the ownership. And they're very, I don't know if you ever see them on various websites.
I haven't seen them on various websites. Let me get this straight, though. Sox fan criticizing Twins fan for not liking ownership.
No, a Twins fan don't like anything. They are a miserable bunch, and they have been for quite some time. I don't know if this is breaking
top
news.
Of your head. Most unlikable Twins player ever in your world. Who's the biggest villain in Twins history for you?
It could be the former White Sox player.
Justin Morneau?
That's the guy. Yeah. Don't make me say it. That guy, you know, he sees Kenny in the parking lot and starts joking about how many old sluggers they've signed. And then, as if to confirm his objection, they signed him to a one-year, $5 million deal. Let's give that useless hockey player $5 million. Wasn't he a hockey player?
I think so.
He started his concussion.
Yeah, I think you get that right.
Yeah.
Sox, meanwhile,
I never liked that guy.
No, the Twins aren't liking what's happening on the South Side because the Sox, with Martin Perez backing up his big talk, six hitless, not just scoreless, hitless innings.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Can you believe what's going on with the White Sox pitching, the starting pitching?
I do believe it, and I believe it because I believe that Brian Bannister knows what he's doing. I think we talked about this. Somebody with the White Sox knows what they're doing, and I think we've identified who it is.
Brian Bannister has made a lot of changes organizationally, and he's brought in a consistent philosophy and approach. And it seems to be working early on. Now, it is only a four-game sample size, but what a four games it has been.
Historic.
There have been four teams in Major League history that have had their starting pitchers go at least five innings and give up zero earned runs in the first four starts.
Right.
The 2019 Blue Jays.
I remember that well.
The 2013 Giants.
Never forget it.
1976 Brewers.
Oh, boy, the Brew Crew.
And the White Sox of this year.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. I would not have thought this was going to be the staff that would make that kind of history.
I'm glad we're talking to Steve Stone later in the week, right? Mm-hmm. He said on the broadcast that he said many good things, but he said at one point, and it was in the fairly early going, I believe, that that Brian Bannister, when reviewing tape of his previous performances, noticed that when he started his operation with his hands at his waist, he pitched a lot more comfortably and a lot better than he did when he raised his hands toward his chest. And so he encouraged him to get back to having his hands lower before he started his pitching. And this is just something that he picked up on by watching tape.
Observational?
Yes. And it apparently has made a huge impact for the guy.
That's a really savvy, observation by him.
By Stoney, too, for picking up on it.
Yeah. We can talk to a lot of people. In a lot of different seasons, I'm not sure we'll find anybody who knows more about pitching than Steve Stone.
I agree with you.
And that comes through each and every broadcast. But I think with Brian Bannister, you're right about identifying him as a guy that was brought into the organization, has a history with the White Sox because his father pitched here.
Yep.
And he has made an impact in some of these. You know, we talk about the young pitching. That's not really what this first four guys represents.
No, it's kind of we haven't gotten to the young pitching.
We haven't gotten
yet
to the good part yet.
That's right.
Now, Jonathan Cannon could be part of that core. Sean Burke probably will be part of that core too. But the other two guys, Davis Martin and Martin Perez yesterday.
Well, Perez is a veteran guy that they brought in.
And
Davis Martin's been around a little while, but he's got a lot of years left. He's not too
long.
He's
one of those crafty pitchers that has figured out ways mechanically maybe to improve himself. I think they made a reference to the broadcast on Sunday that he used to bend, has kind of an unusual bend before his delivery, and he eliminated that. And so there's different mechanical adjustments they have made, and everything they have done so far has been right.
I am very interested to see if they can keep it going, to see what kind of pitcher Shane Smith is, how he does, the Rule 5 guy from Milwaukee.
Pressure's on.
He's up next, right?
Pressure's on.
And then when we go out there Wednesday, we'll get a chance to see Burke again.
I am not opposed to that, you know? Listen, there's a lot of... I would like to go out there
ideas?
Because... you know, you would find it interesting, Molly, if we do go out to the ballpark, need to show you. I think that the CHSN shot in the pregame show where yes. Chuck and Ozzy are, that's a cool studio.
Oh, it looks
great. It's a cool setup.
Yeah, it
and
does look fantastic.
It's on the fourth level, and it's just, you can see behind it if you're watching Sox games on CHSN. And it's they really did a nice job with that because it's one of the cooler backdrops.
It's like, you know what's great? It's like the set itself looks like it's all glass. Mm-hmm. It looks like you can see through the desk kind of. They don't kind of get rid of the beautiful backdrop. It looks like it's like on a roof somewhere. It looks like a guy like me needs to be kind of tied up. And
well, it's not as scary as it looks.
The urge to jump is almost overwhelming.
Well, we'll get you that close then. I will take you up there because it is a cool thing to see. You don't feel that urge, though.
Okay.
You just feel like you can watch the game comfortably. And it's a nice little setup.
Because they've started great. They're 2-2.
It's fun.
But you get into some of those later months of the season. Oh, boy.
Well, now we're in April. No fooling. The Sox are good.
Yeah. Now, the Sox look pretty good. They took them,
good.
What, 11 dates for their second win, right? Then they need like a week and a half. I'm just saying, that's pretty quick to get two wins.
Offensively, we talk about the pitching, but Andrew Benintendi's off to a very good start for a guy that I think we weren't even expecting to play yet.
He's got a broken bone in his hand.
Which is somewhat
He hit his 100th home run.
And he wasn't even supposed to be in the lineup yet. He comes back from a broken bone at a tricky place in his hand, and he's got more power.
It's pretty crazy.
He's a Benny bomb, two of them.
And your guy, Vaughny.
He needed that.
He needed a home run.
He needed
that. You know what was great? It's like, it was like a line drive homer, and I like Byron Buxton. I think he's a great player. I've seen him play really well. I was delighted that ball went over his glove.
He
kind of jumped. You know what I mean? I was just like, yeah!
He's the kind of guy that would come down with that.
He'd always ruin that. He'd ruin your life.
I think it was
purpose.
Interesting watching that homer because, one, it was a line drive. It was kind of the way you see Vaughn when he starts to see the ball well, that he has hits like that before. But we also talked to Brooke Fletcher yesterday before the game, and she is going to find out exactly where he is mentally, and he's been hitting the ball hard, but he wasn't getting results. And then he goes out and he hits a home run.
Right. But they said that on the broadcast. Stoney mentioned that he's been hitting the ball really hard just at people.
Yeah. And so maybe this has changed his luck. And Sox are back at it. We were able to enjoy that yesterday. But we had to enjoy baseball because the Bulls really were not worth watching.
Oh, they were terrible.
They were terrible.
And, I don't—
Expected?
Let me just pull back on saying they were terrible. They were totally outclassed. Like, I don't know if it was a Bulls problem or if it's an OKC problem. That team is seriously good.
They're really deep.
They are really a good team.
And you would like to have seen the Bulls put up a little more resistance, I think, though.
Right.
As good as
OKC
is.
They were out of that game very quickly. I mean, they were down. It was like you blinked. You're like, let me just see if I turn that light off, and they were down 20. What? I just turned my back for a second. How did that happen?
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 27 points, 12 assists. Not even his average, but you can see why he is the front runner for the MVP, or at least among the top two or three.
Yeah, he's good.
Do you think he's going to get MVP?
I do.
The Joker?
I think he will get it.
Okay.
I think it's his turn.
I think it's his turn.
Yeah.
That's the way it kind of works, right?
And it's a pity because they once gave it to Joel Embiid because it was his turn, and it wasn't his turn.
Yeah. He kind of jumped in line there.
Yeah. That wasn't right.
I could see SGA, though, getting it this year because of the kind of year that they've had. Bulls back at home tonight against the Raptors.
Is he leading the league in scoring? He's averaging like 32
points a game.
It's crazy.
It's a crazy on that team because— Number one,
Kobe struggled in that game.
They're so deep that you figure that's going to be somebody else stepping forward night in and night out. And number two, they have such big leads, he may not have to play that hard or that often.
The Bulls have now lost two in a row.
Yeah. Since
coinciding with you going to that game on Saturday.
Well, you were there too.
Well, one pointing fingers at me.
You brought the double whammy.
You brought the bad mojo.
Well, we should go tonight.
Well, maybe we should go tonight.
We should go tonight.
We'll show them.
against the Raptors. 7 o'clock tip at the UC. Going to be on WBBM.
Oh, the Raptor. I thought it was the Rapture.
No,
I didn't know
it's
what
the Raptors.
Name was.
No, not okay. That kind of gathering.
I thought it was the end of, never mind.
6:45 on WBBM because, of course, the Cubs are on the Score where they belong. And so tonight is the night I'm going to be able to listen to all of the Cub game because they're going to get the internet thing worked out in Sacramento. They're going to plug things in now. Router's going to be plugged in.
I'm looking forward to a different, extra special sporting event, as you can tell. From my hat.
Loyola.
Go Ramblers.
They're down in the basketball cathedral known as Hinkle Fieldhouse.
That's right. That's right.
In Indianapolis. Where else would they be? If you want to celebrate the sport, you go to Indiana. And that's where they are. NIT semifinal. Who do they play?
Tennessee Chattanooga.
Oh, wow. Okay. They should beat Tennessee Chattanooga, right?
Yeah.
I think so. Then they would
advance. I don't know.
The finals are Thursday night.
I don't know anything about Tennessee Chattanooga. I know Tennessee is a good team, but I don't know about Chattanooga.
That'll be great for the Ramblers. But you're going to the Bulls game?
I am.
Okay. What are you going to do? Watch on your phone?
I think it starts at 8.
Okay.
So I think I'll be all right. I think aren't we going to a box again? Haven't you now proclaimed that you will only go when you have a box?
I will only go when going to a suite.
So that way we can,
Father!
Get some free food and maybe turn the TV on.
Well, we need to do that. It's going to be on Loyola's televised.
Yes!
It's semifinal.
It's on Espen.
Oh, we got to find that then. We'll find that.
Yeah.
We'll get the food going.
There you go.
That's all right.
It's a well-traveled path.
Yes,
we just did it the other night.
We're getting spoiled here,
is it the same
Molly.
Crew? Or
we're getting spoiled.
I think I could go sit in a skybox for a living if anyone is looking to hire someone for that role.
Professional fan.
Yeah, exactly. Professional skybox guest.
I'm in.
That sounds good.
Well, yeah, it was a fun night. It was a fun night because of the baseball.
Yeah, it was great.
You know, it was the first cycle for the Cubs since Mark Grace.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. I wouldn't think Grace may be more likely than a catcher to do it, but it's kind of like, is a first baseman likely to do that? I think if you just think about the
as likely as a catcher.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, it's very unlikely.
Maybe more likely than a catcher.
Yeah, Carson Kelly, he's not exactly known for his wheels.
You know what he did, though? He started it right. He got the solo homer. Let's just get this thing going.
It does look like a bandbox. How many home runs are going to be hit in Sacktown
How many cycles in Sacktown? Yeah. You're gonna need some wheels when you're there. All right, we've got so much to get to. We've got the pick six. I believe in about half an hour, while we are arguing over the great stories of the day, the Bears head coach will be speaking at the owners' meetings in Palm Beach, Florida.
Speaking again.
Speaking again.
Or speaking
and
still.
Again. Still.
He's still speaking.
Yeah, he's taking a pause right now just to get some food in him.
Yeah.
And then he'll be back to talking to the media. That we have a lot of different sounds from him. But that should be a lot of fun. And we'll talk about that, too. Pick six next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face.
That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Ben Johnson spoke Monday at the NFL owners' meetings in Florida and talked about coaching Caleb Williams outside of his comfort zone. That continues an overall theme of making Bears players, quote, comfortable being uncomfortable. With Caleb specifically, is that a good idea? Can he handle the heat?
I should hope so. I mean, the reality is when you start talking about starting a football season, when you start talking about preseason games, that's like preseason practices, preseason games. They are kind of created to make the quarterback feel good, look good. I like the idea of challenging him. I like the idea of coaching him up, and I think that this guy can do that. And I think that it's an important thing. The whole comfort discomfort kind of thing, comfortably uncomfortable. I like that idea. I like when he said it the first time, and I think that it's kind of what you have to do with a young quarterback. You want to build up a lot of his confidence. Yeah, but I thought we saw last year the Bears going over the board trying to make him look good, feel good, talk him up, and it didn't really help once you got into the problems that occur in every season. So I think that this guy will try to make him work a little bit harder, make him a little bit more uncomfortable, challenge him a little bit more than they did. I think it's important, but I think that it's really when a guy knows what his job is and he knows how to work with quarterbacks, and I believe Ben Johnson does, I think it's not just about making him look good or feel good in the preseason. But a lot of that is already there. A lot of that is, you know, when you play a defense all the time and they can't jump routes and they can't, you know, everybody knows what's coming, and it's all designed to make the quarterback look pretty good.
Yeah, and that's the point where I think Ben Johnson will try to make Caleb comfortable. Easy reads, not giving him too much at the line of scrimmage, because I think there was this weird notion last year with the coaching staff that just give him the reins of the offense, let him make all the checks at the line of scrimmage, and he's just going to be comfortable. Well, he came from a college offense at USC, where we have seen quarterbacks have a learning curve. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, they have to have some training wheels coming into the NFL, learning how to play under center. We saw him struggle a little bit with that at times last year, struggle with a mesh point on running plays. Yep. Just those simple things are things that he's going to have to become more comfortable with, and it's going to take rep after rep after rep, and Ben Johnson keeps talking about it, ripping it down to the studs, going back to the basics, And I think that learning those fundamentals are going to be uncomfortable for him at first, but are going to pay some huge dividends in the long run.
He does
keep talking about starting over with Caleb Williams and making him uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I love everything that Ben Johnson has to say in the way that he says it and how accessible he has been since day one. And I think he'll continue that because he's got the energy, the charisma, and the clarity. He has all the things you want in an effective communicator. But I will say this, the more he continues to talk about how he's looking forward to making Caleb Williams uncomfortable, it leaves the impression that Caleb Williams spent his rookie season way too comfortable, maybe even complacent. Maybe this is the kind of player that needs to be rattled or shaken or reminded that you're not in college anymore. This isn't going to be easy. And maybe the implication is that you've always had it easy. I look at these comments and I'm reminded that, well, Caleb Williams isn't on scholarship anymore. He's going to have to really be a committed professional for the first time. That's the implication, isn't it? For the first time, this is what it's going to be like to be a professional, Caleb Williams. Yeah, that may be true. But boy, are we reminded of the fact that maybe he wasn't always that guy as a rookie. And he wasn't always the guy committed to, you know, living, breathing, eating, and sleeping football. Because if that's what needs to change, if he needs to rip everything down to the studs, including the approach to football, where were we last year and why didn't we see this? So I love all of the stuff that Ben Johnson brings to the table. It's probably all true, but it leaves me wondering how much we really knew Caleb Williams as a rookie.
Yeah, great question.
How about the White Sox pitching staff? Yesterday, they became just the fifth team in MLB history to have every starting pitcher go 5-plus innings and not allow an earned run in each of their first four games in a season since earned runs became an official stat in both leagues in 1913. Can you explain the combination of Sean Burke, Jonathan Cannon, Davis Martin, and Martin Perez, and how they haven't allowed an earned run over 23 innings while giving up 11 hits, 8 walks, and striking out 19?
Wow. Put some respect on their names. I guess that's the surprise of the first week of the season. We're not talking about Glavin, Maddox, Smoltz, and Avery.
Aren't we?
Well, maybe we are. We're not even talking about some of the greatest. You look back at 2005, celebrating the 20-year anniversary of the greatest White Sox season ever. And those starting pitchers are the reason why they swept through the playoffs. This isn't even that. But the history they made is eyebrow-raising. It's impressive. And you have to give them credit for, even though it's a small sample size, I don't care. You're not even spin through the rotation. Who expected this? To be talking about the White Sox pitching, starting pitching, four games into the season as they make history. Long may it last. It gives them a chance. I'd rather have good pitching than good hitting any day. And I think the White Sox, this is a reflection of, so far, an overall approach organizationally to pitching. You mentioned Brian Bannister. It's a great mention. Ethan Katz deserves some credit, and so do these guys. The four guys. And today, they put the pressure on Shane Smith, who, of the four, probably had the most impressive and surprising spring training.
Yep.
So it's exciting to anticipate what happens next.
As far as an explanation, no, I don't have one. Especially yesterday, Martin Perez. That was like vintage Jamie Moyer from circa 2004.
That's a great guy.
Lefty throwing 88 mile an hour fastballs, changeup after changeup, to the point where you wonder, is it even a changeup when you're just throwing 85 miles an hour? And in a day and age where we're talking about torpedo bats and the Yankees hitting 7 home runs a game and guys throwing 99 miles an hour, here's a 33-year-old in his first start not throw a single pitch over 90 miles an hour, go 6 hitless innings. So I at this point we go back to credit for manager and credit for the developmental people for the start to the season that we've seen from this pitching staff. And I think that over the years the Sox have had, I know we're going to get into a little bit later about with Garrett Crochet, but they've had a lot of really good starting pitchers, and I don't think that that pipeline of pitchers is going to be ending anytime soon.
You know, I'm really impressed. As we talked about yesterday, like someone up there knows what they're doing with pitching. It's fairly obvious. And I loved the way, I think it was Cannon when he had his start, and their conclusion was, wow, how did he pitch so well when he struggled so much in spring training? He probably went into spring training as the guy most likely to start opening day, and you couldn't pull that off because he was had like a 14.4 ERA or something. And what is the difference when he comes to Chicago and he's spinning it? And that was the explanation you heard. Well, he's spinning it. You don't get that. You don't get your breaking ball, all that stuff working when you're in spring training in Arizona. There isn't just a lot of action on it. It just feels like what we've seen thus far from the White Sox is kind of what we had heard they were going to do, which is they had pitchers. They didn't have, like, velocity guys. They had guys that were going to pitch. And it looks like they went through the rotation one time, and I guess that will be completed with the fifth starter today. But they pitched, right? They didn't try to just overwhelm anybody. They didn't try to, as you say, it was more about fooling people and handling your business and each pitch mattering, as opposed to, you know, a team that is worried about trying to throw the ball past people. And I think that when you have a lot of young pitchers, usually you see a lot of velocity, and you know, this was pitching, and it really worked the first time through the rotation, hopefully continuing today.
Wow. You know, it's a scary good question, right?
The voice of our 9 o'clock guest, Bruce Levine. What did you think about the Cubs opening night of the A's 3-year residency in Sutter Health Park, home of the San Francisco Giants AAA team, the Sacramento Rivercats? How about Cubs reliever Ryan Brazier telling Bob Nightingale, "It's so stupid we have to play at a AAA stadium." Brazier said there is a perfectly good stadium in Oakland and he'd rather play there. What's worse, the cramped clubhouse or having to spend the night in Sacktown?
Wow. There you go.
That's a mean-spirited question. Yikes.
I used Sacktown correctly. I got to tell you, I think it's crazy that they have to split games with the Rivercats. Did you read any of this stuff? They like, you know, they have like 11 consecutive dates. It's either them or the Rivercats. I don't know why the Giants go along with this. And it's 3 years, man, while they figure out where they're going to play and if they can build a stadium in Vegas. And holy cow, it is. I mean, I think the point Brazier was making is that there's an empty ballpark in Oakland that's a perfectly big, normal-sized facility, and he's used to going there and playing there. And the idea that a cramped clubhouse is really going to keep you from playing your best is just absurd, frankly. But it is super bizarre that they're splitting time with a minor league team, and it's really bizarre that Tampa is doing it as well. You got two major league ball clubs out of 30 that are playing in minor league ballparks. And you're right, they don't draw a lot of people. And I doubt they'll draw a ton this year. But it is major league baseball. I mean, there are going to be teams with stars going into that building. It's kind of a cool thing if you like baseball to get seasons there and to watch all the baseball players come through. I don't know that you're going to fall in love with Oakland as a team, but maybe they're better than we thought, although they didn't look very good yesterday.
Yeah, it's a really bad look for Major League Baseball. 3 years? They're going to do this for three years, maybe longer? Like, what happens if the L.A. Stadium, or L.A., Las Vegas Stadium thing doesn't go through? What are we going to do, 4 or 5? Are they going to go back to Oakland? Like, that's, at this point, I think that the players are rightfully frustrated, because at least you go to Oakland, I mean, you're in the San Francisco, Oakland metropolitan area. Exactly. You know where to fly into. You know where you're going to stay. And it's a cool thing for the people of Sacramento. I actually have a friend I used to work with who is the PA announcer there, who gets to be the PA announcer for Major League games.
Well, that's cool.
Which is awesome. Shout out David Schulte. But as far as Major League Baseball is concerned, it is a tough look for two teams to be having to play their season in AAA parks, and one team that may have to do it for three or more years.
The Rays is more understandable because of the nature of their ballpark.
It was a natural disaster.
So yes. You almost give MLB a pass on that one, or you understand a little bit more. This is, in Sacramento, all on Rob Manfred. You had an alternative, and I think two things are true here. One, I compartmentalize some of these complaints. I don't like to hear Ryan Brazier say it's stupid, and I think the players come off as sounding entitled and kind of spoiled when they complain about the cramped quarters for a stadium they're going to visit once a year. So I don't really have a ton of time for the whining part of it. But I also think that there's some legitimate concern, and I think the baseball has to look at this as whether is this a good idea for the growth of the sport, for the playing conditions? Is this a regulation Major League ballpark? It looked very the outfield fence, the home runs. It looked like, well, this is going to be an asterisk to every statistic. And I also think that the reason it's not in Oakland is because Oakland didn't support the A's to some degree. 2023, they averaged 10,275 fans. Last year, they averaged 11,528. They'll average more fans per game in Sacramento. But I don't know if it makes sense for them to stay there for 3 years. That's 240 games that are played under, you know, minor league conditions. And I know it's the same dimensions it's baseball. But the dimensions might be an issue. The conditions might be an issue. And so I don't think this is going to be a problem that anyone gets used to anytime soon. So I do think the MLB's got a little bit of a problem here.
Completely understand the question. And I know you've got to ask. Part of your job.
The voice of Josh Giddey, who, was on the short end of the revenge game in Oklahoma City against his former team, the Thunder, 145-117, the final score there. Who misses their former player more, or is the answer neither, between Giddey and Caruso? And how would you describe the way the Bulls played the best team in the West?
It was pathetic. Defensively, pathetic to give up 145 points. I know they are the best team in the NBA, but show a little resistance. You are a team in the Bulls that had been playing at a much higher level than we saw last night. Giddey, individually, 15-10-8, but it was not impactful, 15-10-8. Alex Caruso only played 15 minutes only because that's all they needed. He's a guy whose plus-minus is off the charts again. When you look at his impact on the Oklahoma City Thunder, it's exactly what they traded for. And he's exactly what they need going into the playoffs. He's why a lot of people, he's one of the reasons why. They're deep and talented and probably going to be favored to win the West. They're good enough to do that, as we saw last night. Giddey is playing his role well and developing at a rate that we all can enjoy and appreciate in Chicago. This was a trade that was good for both teams. Last night was not a good example of why the Bulls are enjoying Josh Giddey, because the Bulls failed to show up. Kobe White had 7 points. When that happens, they're not going to win. And they were very poor effort by the Bulls.
Yeah, it was not a good effort by the Bulls, but this Oklahoma City team is for real. And I'm not. I know that there's this thought like, oh well, once they get to the playoffs, they're a young team. I'm concerned about that. I'm not concerned about that. This is the team with all the trappings of one that can make a deep run into the playoffs. And you look at Alex Caruso as an example of why he played 28 minutes a game for the Bulls in two of the three seasons in Chicago. He's playing 19 minutes a game. He's averaging 6 points a game. He's not really having to do much offensively, and they're keeping him fresh for when they get into the playoffs, and when he's going to be diving on the floor and locking down other team's best players. And they're able to do that because they have a guy like Isaiah Joe who can come off the bench and score 30. And they're just so deep. They go 9-10 guys that are able on any given night to drop 15 or 20 points. And they play really, really good defense. So last night to me was more about Oklahoma City than the Bulls. It was a reminder that the Bulls are still a long way away from even coming close to contending with a team like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a canyon between the two teams. It's like a grand canyon, if you will, between them. I got to tell you, one of the thoughts I had as I watched the Bulls just overwhelmed by a significantly better team is, we're sitting here sweating out, are they going to host the play-in game? Are they going to be in the play-in game? Significant minutes matter. If they made the playoffs, that's what Cleveland's going to do to them. They're going to catch the same problems. They are not NBA quality. They're a young team that's trying to improve, but they're not in the same zip code as a team like OKC or, whether it's Boston or Cleveland or whoever they would most likely have to play. They're just going to get steamrolled. And there's value in that, I suppose, for a young team. At least we're trying to sell ourselves on it. Mike Palm said something on Friday that stayed with me, that there was only a few teams that are really trying hard every time, every game, every possession. And we saw two of them go at it last night. The OKC is so young and so good and so deep. And by the way, they have they own the draft for the next 5 or 6 years. They got so many future picks, but they are playing hard on a game to game basis. And it's the Bulls are trying on every possession. They're trying. You got two teams that are really trying, and the difference in that game was like men and boys. It was like they decided to beat up the JV team. I mean, that's how lopsided it felt. I loved the way Giddy was received. They love him there. They were the fans gave him a standing ovation. That was really nice for him. And I think he's never said a bad word about the organization. But I believe he's really happy to be where he is now because he is
he's valued
a featured
more.
Star
yeah,
in the whole
he's
thing.
He's not the eighth guy on the bench.
Exactly. So you're right, David. I think it worked out for everybody.
Kind of similar to the question that the guy asked me over there.
That the voice of Nick Sirianni, Eagles head coach, which is more likely to cause its sports to change the rules or cause people to complain? The tush push in the NFL or the torpedo bat in Major League Baseball? Are both fair game or pushing things a little far? No pun intended.
It's a good question. Did you see Sean McVay said that he doesn't consider it a football play?
I saw that.
It's like a scrum.
I saw that.
I thought that was weird. He did say
for him to say that.
Yeah, he said that he didn't want to take away something because someone was good at it. He didn't like that idea. But he also said that he thought it was a player safety issue and it's just a big scrum and they have plays they can call off it, but that was really interesting to me to hear him say that. He's on the competition committee, and mm-hmm. he has a lot of gravitas, as we know, just looking around the league. I'll say this. Nick Sirianni, they had a photo yesterday of all the head coaches, only guy wearing shorts. I was hoping I could talk to Dustin about it. Look at him.
Take away a Super Bowl?
And he had his head down. He wasn't looking at the camera.
He's also the only guy with the Super Bowl ring.
He was
last year.
The most recent Super Bowl ring. Yeah. He was sitting next to Andy Reid. He's got some.
Yeah.
I don't think the bat's illegal. I think you'd have a hard time banning it just because of the shape of the thing when you're using the required amount of wood or whatever it might be. I get it that everyone feels like there's an advantage going on. But I saw the Brewers allowed 10 runs in their next game, and that's not against the torpedo bats. Maybe the Brewers stink this year. I don't know what my conclusion is. But the tush-push thing is different altogether because they're going to have a meeting about that today. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of push against it, but it's also not really well embraced. It's weird.
Yeah, that's what... Isn't it weird how split the football people are on this?
Yeah.
I'd expect, like, oh, football, no, that's a man's play. This is a we got to keep this. I would expect the rest of the league to jump in and say, no, like, don't get rid of this.
They can't stop it, that's why.
Yeah, but, yeah, so that's why you don't push back against it? Yeah, I guess I've answered my own question. But with the tush push, one team does it, and other teams try it and can't do it, like the Buffalo Bills. They try in the AFC Championship, and it ends their season. They can't figure out how to get 1 yard on a quarterback sneak. And now you're going to tell me that this is a safety issue? Look, I'm all for player safety, but I'm not going to sit here and compare it to the wedge buster rules or the kickoff rules where defenders get a 30-yard running start. And if it's a safety issue, are all running plays like inside zone or duo plays safety issues where you have guards going downhill and double-teaming defensive tackles and three techniques? As far as the bat goes, I think that this is going to be embraced by baseball because it's a way, if it anecdotally right now we're seeing teams using it, scoring more runs. If that trend continues and they have found a way within the parameter of the rules for every team to use it and scoring to go up in Major League Baseball, I think Major League Baseball will absolutely embrace it.
I think we'll find out if that indeed is the case. Because
yeah, we don't know yet.
Well, I think this is one of those things we'll look back at. And remember when those torpedo bats made such a stir and everybody was wondering about them and they were ordering them in bulk? And then what happened? Then things kind of leveled out again. If this were such a, I think, strategic advantage, somebody would have come up with this sooner. It does make sense to try. I just don't know if it's going to sweep the league as much as the Yankees early onslaught suggests it will. Things will level off a little bit, and plus the bottom line with both of these issues, the tush push and the torpedo bats, they're not illegal. And the push to make the tush push illegal is only led by teams that can't stop it. It's not led by teams that have evidence, data, research that support the idea that it has injury concerns or health. It's a health and safety issue. If it is indeed a health and safety issue, like the kickoff rule was, and they had concussion era awareness that heightened everyone's awareness about why that was bad for the sport or why they wanted to change the kickoff, okay. No more wedge busting then because you want to limit concussions. I don't see anything like that associated with this push to outlaw a football play, because it is a football play. It's fourth and short. It's third and short. Whatever it is, it's a specialized play. Jalen Hurts does it well. Find your own quarterback then. Find your own defensive tackle then. Jim Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel were right. They could. This is going to limit how many offensive linemen you insert into the game next. I don't know. You can't stop it. Find a way, but don't outlaw it. So in both cases, as long as they're legal, there's nothing to complain about.
Well, I guess let me ask you a question, David.
That the voice of Steve Stone. Garrett Crochet signed a 6-year, $170 million contract with the Red Sox, which likely never would have happened in Chicago. But if you could, would you prefer Crochet had stayed with the White Sox at that price or the three prospects they got in return?
Boy, that's gonna be a tough question to answer, because Garrett Crochet is the kind of pitcher that, as we said before they traded him, you could justify building around. He's young, he's an ace, he's a stud. But pitchers and long-term contracts, the way that these injuries are keep cropping up, Garrett Cole the latest, you would worry. I would worry if you signed Garrett Crochet to a 6-year, $170 million deal. I would think that's okay. Wow, that's a shocker that Jerry Reinsdorf would sign somebody to a long-term contract. I would think that you could understand why, and then I would spend the rest of the time wondering how long into the contract will he come down with another injury that knocks him out for a season. So, I say the Sox probably got what they should have out of the deal, and they might be better off with three guys rather than counting on one, even though he's an ace.
Yeah, the question is, would I rather have Garrett Crochet? The answer is yes. I look, the Sox, I of course, it was all in all our heads that they were not going to be able to re-sign him because they were not going to pay him the money that he was
deserve.
Like that, it's unfortunate that we have to think that way, but we know based on past contracts that they're not willing to go over $100 million for a contract. So you get the prospects in return. But yeah, I think it's fair to look back and see what other pitchers that used to pitch for the White Sox are doing and how you could have built around guys like Chris Sale and Dylan Cease and Garrett Crochet, and now Reynaldo Lopez is revived his career, Eric Fetty,
and Carlos Rodon.
The list goes on, and you're still developing pitching prospects, and you still have some guys, even right now, on your roster that can dominate ball games the way that they have the first four starts of this season. So, yeah, I hope the White Sox can get to a point where they can start building around players and paying them what they deserve.
First of all, tell me who we're not counting on in that trade, right? You got the better Montgomery. You got the man on a tear, Teal. You got Meidroth. And are we forgetting about Wickelman Gonzalez, who was the fourth player in that deal?
Yes, we are.
A pitcher? No,
yes,
Wickelman is a respected guy with a lot. I'm saying they got four guys.
Yeah, they got four guys.
So you don't know how that's going to work out. But what I would say is most likely, given the last time they traded a guy to the Red Sox, is that they gave them a Cy Young winner who could help them win a World Series. It's like, you know, if you have a Cy Young winner, don't trade him to Atlanta because you don't want to pay him, or you will regret it later in life when he becomes one of the greatest pitchers in the history of the game. One of everybody's favorite
Cubs
players.
The Cubs didn't trade him, though.
Daddy let him go.
They let him go.
But the Sox are worse because they traded him. I'm not taking a shot. I'm just saying, you got a guy in the building. Keep him there. So what are we doing now? Has the wait begun yet as to when they trade Noah Schultz? Do we have to continue to wait for him to develop and then get a couple years out of him and then give him the Red Sox? It's just like, I mean, it's frustrating being a White Sox fan because, yeah, it looks like this trade might work out. But you see, they gave who'd they trade yesterday? They gave somebody
Jake Eater. He was the guy in the burger trade.
Well, I'm just saying.
I know.
What did they get out of that?
Cash considerations.
Why did they? They had two guys. They got
cash.
They got rid of guys.
They got cash.
They got fired because the two of them.
Well, you know who won that trade?
Chris Getz.
Jake Berger.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, you know,
I know.
Ifs and buts and honey and nut, whatever.
$170 million for Crochet, good for him.
He's going to win a Cy Young, and he's going to win a World Series for them.
And they're going to win that
happens,
trade.
They're going to then they've won the trade going away. And I'm not saying that the Sox didn't do well in this trade because it looks like Kyle Teal can't stop hitting in three games in the minor leagues, but it's frustrating that you know that any good pitcher you get, you got to trade. So let's change things. Let's change that up. Let's spend some money. Let's keep your own guys this time. Next time.
Fair enough.
All right. And Wickelman Gonzalez could be the centerpiece.
I forgot about him. I got to admit.
It's okay.
Good call.
I love Wickelman.
Good call.
Yeah, I believe his Instagram handle is Wickelman27.
Is that the case? I can't wait to check you on that.
I might be wrong.
Okay.
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. We got the Extra Point next.
Set up this Extra Point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, guys, we're going to hear from Ben Johnson here in the next, we'll call it hour or two. But did you enjoy hearing from him yesterday, especially about how himself, the coordinators and personnel guys all got together, watched tape of the top 20 players in the draft? So he's going to be speaking this morning. What do you hope to hear from him?
I think every time Ben Johnson talks is an opportunity to get excited about next football season if you're a Bears fan. Because he just has that knack right now. It's still got the new car smell, right? Everything is new. Everything is fresh. Everything is dynamic. And when he talks about, utilizing the slot position. And that's going to be the one spot in his offense that seems to always flourish with his schemes, as he's told, I think, CHGO yesterday, as he made the rounds from podcast to podcast. I think everything that Ben Johnson says about the Bears' offense is exciting, whether it's being excited about the way the interior line has been totally overhauled and upgraded. So now they have a semblance of a running game. They'll be able to protect the passer and make things possible for Caleb Williams. Or it's talking about Dennis Allen and the changes defensively that they're going to make and what they are going to be in terms of an attacking defense, or his staff fitting together and watching those 20 players that are going to be available in the draft. Everything that Ben Johnson says should fill a Bears fan with hope and enthusiasm, because he sounds like he knows what he's doing. He's a first-time head coach who definitely talks like he belongs and has been here for a very long time. So I don't expect anything different today. We'll have plenty to pick apart. He's not going to tip his hand on any specific thing, but I do like what he says also about Caleb Williams and making him comfortably uncomfortable.
Yeah, every time he speaks, it kind of affirms what we all thought about him, that you knew what type of style he was going to want to bring. You knew that he was going to want to rehab the offensive line. And his comment, it was innocuous to some, but pointing out the three technique on his guard as the matchup that most concerns him tells you a lot about his philosophy and a lot about how much urgency he brought to the building to overhaul the offensive line. And it makes you wonder how much they're going to put into draft capital with the top four picks that they have in that position. He talked about Tyler Warren, and which was interesting.
Sounded like he's drafting him, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's if Tyler Warren gets to pick 10.
That's quite a reaction. We need to get back to that.
I'll get to it, but okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, way Dennis Allen talked about him, maybe he goes top five now.
Yeah.
But
Dennis Allen wants him. Give me a break.
Every time he speaks, you learn a little bit more about his philosophy, and it kind of affirms what we thought he was going to do to try to turn this thing around.
Yeah, you know, what I want to hear him say, we have still a lot of work to do on the line of scrimmage. And before we can indulge in one of my preferred positions, we need indulge.
That's a great word choice.
I didn't use the right word.
No, for you, yeah.
For my point,
yes,
I think.
It's a good word.
Yes. I thought I had misspoken.
No.
But I think I want to hear line of scrimmage. And I heard a lot of, maybe we should take the tight end. You know, our defensive guy wants to take the tight end. And I was like, no! And that's a tight end that can block. He can do different things. I understand why he is so appealing. And, maybe he is the guy to take. I don't know. But I personally just want them to keep getting better on the offensive line and the defensive line. And I think that the idea that they have now freed themselves to go out and to draft the best player available, I don't believe they've done that. I still think they need to draft on the line, on both lines, line of scrimmage. You can start drafting running backs later. The tight end could be a different deal, because he said that he got the coordinators, and he had King with them, and they sit in there and they watch the top 20 prospects, and that he said that it was Dennis Allen who was like, oh, look at all the things the tight end could do. How would you stop him? I wouldn't know where to begin trying to get. And that's all he's listening
gamesmanship
for.
Or legitimately impressed?
It's a really good question, and we'll find out once they go. I don't know if there is gamesmanship. It seems like he's awful honest.
You picked the right word.
It seems like he's giving you the right answers.
You choose right verbs, but I wonder how much do you worry about Ben Johnson becoming self-indulgent going into this draft?
Like I said, I think they need to get the offensive line, the defensive line, they need to get it corrected. When you talk about how the three technique and blocking him kind of scares you, that means you're not good enough on the offensive line. That's what that answer is. So why don't you get better on the offensive line? Why don't you get better on your defensive line? That's the way to win football games. Okay. And I really thought that they had decided to do that this offseason, but it turns out they just wanted to do it. If it turns out that they just wanted to do it in order to be able to draft a different position, that's not a good answer in my world.
Does his honesty scare you guys at all? Like,
yes.
Ryan Poles?
Yes. Stop blurting things out. No question. But maybe it's all gamesmanship.
I don't mind, because it could be.
Okay.
Let's continue this.
Yeah, we got to get back to that, because it's worth talking about. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
He's the definition of a football player.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did a cool little exercise a couple weeks ago with Ryan and Ian and Jeff Kings and myself and also the coordinator. So we had Dennis and we had Declan, and we watched a number of the, call it 20 to 30 of the top prospects in this draft. Tyler got up there, and to me, what I'll always remember is Dennis Allen speaking up about how much of a headache it would be to go against a player like that.
Oh, wow.
Not only is he a tenacious football player, he blocks, he runs hard, but the fact that you could put him in the backfield and do some wildcat with him, he felt like that was kind of unique and would give him issues as a defensive coordinator.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Ben Johnson, the Bears head coach. And interesting, he was out in Palm Beach at the owners' meetings yesterday in Florida, and he talked to CHGO. Mm-hmm. I believe that's Adam asking him the questions. They had a sit down, and it's a good answer. The idea that's a football player. The guy is a good football
Tyler
player.
Tyler Warren's a very good football
yes,
player.
Yes, he is.
He's likely to be off the board when the Bears draft 10th. He's that good.
Yes, he's that good.
If he is there, I understand the conversation, because Ben Johnson uses two tight ends
last year
more than, I think, all but two teams with Detroit. So I get it. I think it would say more about Tyler Warren than Cole Kmet.
Yes.
Cole Kmet is...
Tyler Warren would then be your primary tight end.
More than
over
likely.
Cole Kmet.
Yeah, I think if you draft him that high, you would have to find a way to use him. I'm not convinced the Bears are leaning in that direction. There were reports, have been reports, that they set up a private workout with him that's been disputed. We'll find out. It'll come out. I'm not sure it matters that much. But if he's there, it will be tempting. If Ashton Jeanty is there, he'll be tempting. Both are luxuries. Let's face it. Both are luxuries. But I think both are also... guys who, if they draft, you would trust Ben Johnson's instincts. I would, at least. I know your argument on behalf of the offensive line and the line of scrimmage is one I share. But I also think that if he draft either one of those guys because they're enamored with the potential, I'd get that too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not passing judgment on them as football players. I'm just saying I thought we had an agreement that they were going to fix this particular position. On both sides of the line. And my advice is to Dennis Allen, don't go talking about how good a tight end is. Start talking about the defensive tackle you want to have.
How about that? Yeah, start talking about...
Get on a table for one of those guys.
One of those pass rushers? Have those guys be the object of your desire.
That's what you should be doing.
The apple of your
now
eye.
Now you know if you say anything to the head coach...
Don't say anything around Ben.
The offensive-minded head coach, you're going to blow it.
He sees touchdowns. You should see sacks.
Yes, you should see sacks.
All right.
You should see defensive plays in the backfield, for God's sake.
The Cubs scored 18 runs last night. The White Sox had a starter who did not give up a hit. Let's talk baseball next.
We'll do that next. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.